be able to express my gratitude to Evan and Sarah for being there for us and for our children during our most difficult moments. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't think about the son that we lost. And despite my tendency towards optimism, I have struggled to find meaning in his passing. But I do recognize that we were lucky. In the moment that I was brought to my knees, I had folks I could lean on to help me get back up. That's something that I'm profoundly grateful for. Sitting in my car, crying in front of Starbucks, I caught a glimpse of what it might be like to lose the ability to be the parent we all want to be. My mother didn't have the network of support that Arno and I enjoy. She also didn't have the benefit of 2 decades of research on toxic stress to tell her what the impacts on her children might be and what she could do to help herself and her kids. She did the best she could with what she had. But we have more now. We know more. I believe that we can rewrite the story of adversity and break the intergenerational cycle of toxic stress. I wrote this book for all the parents, step-parents, foster parents, grandparents, and caregivers of all stripes who are trying to figure out how to give the little people in their care the best shot in this world, despite the difficulties life throws in their way, and often despite their own histories of adversity. I wrote it for all of the children and young people in this world facing outsized challenges, and for the adults whose health is being shaped by the legacy of their childhoods. My hope is to inspire conversations around dinner tables, at doctor's offices, at PTA meetings, in courtrooms, and at city councils. But my greatest hope is to inspire action, big and small. Whether it's simply learning to recognize when your own stress response is activated and figuring out how to respond in a way that's healthy and not harmful to the people you love, or becoming a mentor to a child in need, or talking to your doctor, there is something that every one of us can do to change the way that we, as a society, respond to ACEs. I believe that when we each find the courage to look this problem in the face, we will have the power to transform not only our health, but our world. Epilogue. It's 2040, and things are a little different. I'm a grandmother now, but wouldn't you know it? I still look good. I'm retired, and when I'm not putzing around in my garden, I keep busy chasing the grandkids. They are 4, 5, and 7, and of course, I spoil them rotten, the guilty pleasure of every grandparent since the beginning of time. Our eldest sons, the twins, are 37, and I'm in love with my daughters-in-law, who both called me directly after their first prenatal appointment to tell me they had an ACE screening as part of their routine prenatal care. Even though it's standard nowadays, they know how much I still love to hear about doctors following through on the guidelines that CYW helped to develop. Our boys just roll their eyes when their wives indulge me as I rattle on with my back-in-the-day stories. But I know they are secretly proud each time they fill out the school forms for their kids and see the checked box that certifies each child has received an ACE screening right along with vaccinations and TB tests. Graybo, who now insists on being called by his proper name, teaches 3rd grade at a public elementary school. He gives me the ACE scoop from the other side of the desk, telling me how the school incorporates ACE awareness into its teacher training. One of the first things the school makes sure of is that teachers know how to recognize the symptoms of toxic stress in their students. Every morning, Gray guides his class in a quiet time meditation practice to help his students hit the reset button as they start the day, reinforcing the self-regulation skills that they've been working on throughout the year. Even though I'm retired, I still make time to teach at least one course on ACEs and toxic stress to the first-year medical students at Stanford, where Kingston is now part of the class. We start at the beginning of the semester with the biological mechanisms, and by the end, we're discussing the latest interventions for healing a disrupted neuroendocrine immune system. On the public health side of things, the movement has taken off. 2 decades ago, CYW was instrumental in convening a group of advocacy and education organizations led by the American Heart Association, the American Cancer Society, and the American Lung Association, and together, they created a powerful public education campaign. It started with a viral video and spun out from there. Billboards, posters in doctor's offices, a Super Bowl ad, and more. Celebrities volunteer to be part of the Faces of ACEs campaign. And they share their stories, along with a call to action. Know your score and learn how to heal. My son's generation is the first to grow into adulthood without the stigma surrounding adversity. These days, having an ACE score isn't any more shameful than having a peanut allergy. But the campaign did far more than change attitudes. 20-plus years later, we have seen a 40% decline in the number of Americans reporting one or more ACEs and a 60% decline in the number of Americans reporting 4 or more ACEs. Adverse events still happen to all kinds of people, but they are no longer handed down from generation to generation to generation. The Resilience Investment Act of 2020, which provided federal dollars for screening, treatment, and research, created a national consortium modeled after the Children's Oncology Group that was wildly successful. The double-digit decline in healthcare spending allows us to reallocate dollars to national priorities in some predictable and some surprising ways. Our increased allocation to early childhood care and education programs was a no-brainer. The big surprise came when I got a call from the U.S. State Department asking me to help advise on a new program that will work closely with other nations' governments to deploy widespread ACE screening and early intervention in high-conflict areas. This way, we can inoculate the younger generation so they will not be susceptible to induction in gangs, militias, and insurgencies. The science of toxic stress has become a powerful tool in maintaining global security, and our military also uses the latest treatments to help our troops returning from combat. Ultimately, I help where I can, but for the most part, there isn't much for me to do. What started out as a movement has become just how people do things. Basic infrastructure, standard of medical practice, common wisdom. So Arno and I spend most of our time just being grandparents. We take our grandkids to the park, we buy them things we know we shouldn't, and when I come across my grandkids chucking paper airplanes at one another, I grab my tape measure and my stopwatch and laugh when they all roll their eyes and flee before the science lesson begins. All of them, that is, except one. Acknowledgements. I must begin by thanking my patients and the families who have shared their lives with me and entrusted me with the care of their greatest treasures, their children. I'm also deeply grateful to the community of Bayview Hunters Point for embracing me, supporting me, and going on this learning journey with me. Special thanks to Dwayne Jones for his guidance, for vouching for me, and for throwing the weight of the mayor's office behind the Bayview Clinic. Though it has long been a dream of mine, I never imagined that I would actually write a book. There's an old saying that you have to see it to be it. I'm grateful to my dear friends, Kathleen Kelly Janis and Anya Manuel, for fearlessly putting their voices into the world and then encouraging me to do the same. I also have to thank Faye Morrison, my fifth and sixth grade teacher at Ohlone Elementary School in Palo Alto, for nurturing my love of reading and writing. Thank you to Rachel and Zara for lovingly caring for my children so that I can care for the children of others. Paul and Daisy Soros supported my medical education and gave me the freedom to practice where my heart, as opposed to my student loans, led me. Stan Hagenbotham and Warren Ilchman at the Paul and Daisy Soros Fellowships for New Americans encouraged me to compose a life and to get out into the world and learn by doing. Credit goes to the National Institutes of Health for supporting my public health education and research training. Thanks to Martin Brotman, Steve Lockhart, and Terry Giovannini at CPMC, who believed in my crazy dream of opening a clinic in Bayview Hunters Point when I was fresh out of residency. I've also benefited from the wise mentorship of Cheryl Polk, Anne O'Leary, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, Esta Solar, Susie Loftus, Lenore Anderson, Jennifer Pitts, George Halverson, Jeff Canada, Brian Stevenson, and Kamala Harris. The first step in healing toxic stress is understanding that it exists in the first place. Thank you to Jamie Redford, Ashley Judd, and Anna Devere Smith for shouting it from the rooftops. I first met Paul Tough at a conference in New York in 2009, when I heard that he worked at the time for the New York Times Magazine, I launched into a 45-minute monologue on ACEs and toxic stress. I'm so thankful that he didn't run for the hills, but rather listened and amplified. All of the research and the science in this book is the product of the tireless efforts of researchers and physicians who have come before me and who continue to make important advances in our understanding of toxic stress and its treatment. They are too many to name, but I want to share how much they inspire me and how grateful I am to those who have laid the scientific foundation for this field. I owe particular thanks to Monica Singer, Sarah Hemmer, Whitney Clark, Todd Rentschler, Lisa Gutierrez-Wang, Susan Briner, Denise Dowd, Andy Garner, Eva Elay, Sheila Walker, Pam Cantor, Jack Shonkoff, Tom Boyce, Nancy Adler, Roy Wade, Mark Rains, Alicia Lieberman, Rob Anda, Vince Felitti, and Victor Carrion, all of whom have greatly influenced my thinking and shaped my approach to identifying and treating ACEs and toxic stress. I owe a great deal to Justin Sherman, my leadership coach, whose patient guidance kept me going when I was ready to give up. All of the data in this book was meticulously assembled by Debbie O with help from Sukhdeep Purewal and other members of our superb research team at the Center for Youth Wellness, including Monica Bucci and Kadiatu Koita. These women have an unmatched commitment to rigor and precision. In addition, I want to thank our exceptional teams at the Center for Youth Wellness and the Bayview Child Health Center, as well as our stellar board of directors, past and present, our leadership council, and our community advisory council. It is my great joy to work side by side with these thoughtful and dedicated people who manage to demonstrate the healing power of individual relationships on a day-to-day basis and share that vision to improve the health and lives of millions. I feel very fortunate to be supported by the brilliant team at Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. I deeply appreciate the efforts of Tracy Rowe, my sharp and hilariously funny copy editor, and Deanne Ermey, whose engaged questions and skillful edits have made this book better than I could have hoped. Credit for encouraging me to write this book goes to Doug Abrams, my literary agent, whose bold spirit ignites boldness in others. I owe much to him and to the wonderful team at Idea Architects, including Laura Love Harden and, most especially, my amazing collaborator, Lauren Hamlin. Thank you, Lauren, for your creativity, your diligence, your partnership, and your wicked sense of humor. Everything that I have accomplished in my life has been because someone believed and invested in me. I would not be where I am if it weren't for the generosity of a few folks who made early bets on me and my team and who nurtured me along the way, including George Sarlo, Elaine Gold, Tom and Jamel Perkins, John and Lisa Pritzker, Bob Ross and the folks at the California Endowment, Russ and Beth Siegelman, Warren Browner at CPMC, Barbara Peekower, Jacqueline Fuller and the team at Google.org, Daniel Lurie and the team at Tipping Point, and Ruth Schaber and the team at the Terra Health Foundation. Special thanks to Dr. Schaber for reading drafts and offering unflinching insights and suggestions to make this book the best that it could be. In addition, I want to thank my patients, colleagues, friends, and family who generously shared their stories for this book. My great hope is that their histories provide the soil from which the seeds of healing can grow. My deepest gratitude goes to my family, my mom, dad, brothers, sister-in-law, cousins, aunties, uncles, and the whole extended clan of Jamaicans, both in the United States and Bacayad. They have been my village, and they exemplify the word resilience. Our four boys, Petros, Paulos, Kingston, and Gray, provide me with the joy and inspiration to give my best every day for the next generation. Finally, there are no words to adequately honor my phenomenal husband. The greatest luck of my life was meeting Arno Harris. He is a wellspring of love, connection, kindness, joy, patience, and hilarity in my life. Plus, he's whip smart and pretty darn hot. I owe him a deep debt of gratitude, not only for reading countless drafts and offering invaluable suggestions and edits, but also for taking on more of the diaper changes, pickups, drop-offs, meal preparations, bath times, and bedtime book reading than will ever be fair, so that I could stay up late and get up early to make this book come into the world.
The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity, was written and read by Dr. Nadine Burke Harris. It was recorded at Outpost Studios in San Francisco. Editing and post-production by Fenn Eichner. The associate producer was Aaron Larson. The Deepest Well was produced and directed by Louisa Solomon. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.